morning. That's just not going to stay up there. Here we go. Just leave it. There we go. Sorry. Okay, everybody get back in the zone where you were. Just go back. Go back. Outside the city gates of Jerusalem, a mass of men, women, children, animals, supplies flowed towards the entrance to the city. A steady stream of endless conversations between old friends, a burst of laughter, the bleating of sheep, the squeals of children rushing between their parents' feet, the groan of the wooden cart over the bumps and dips in a well-traveled road. The stench of sweat and the musk of animals mingled with the tart scent of citrus and the warm heaviness of spices. The air simmered with excitement as the gates of the city rose up in the horizon, a mother welcoming her children home. Welcoming her children to celebration, a true homecoming. Without warning, dust and debris rose high above the crowd, clouding the rich blue of a midday sky in a golden brown haze. Fathers reached for the arms of their children rushing past, silencing their smiles and giggles with a firm grip and a glaring stare. Young and old pulled their cloaks across their mouths to bar the grit of sand from entering their lungs. Still, fits of coughing rose from the crowd. In a frenzy of movement, the mass parted to either side of the road, a strong current instantly dispersing. Grunting and straining as heavy carts and supplies were pushed and pulled to make way, make way, make way for empire. A silent stillness hung over the crowd. Mothers hushed the restless coos of their infants clutched to their chest. The smiles faded, replaced by tight, thin lines of worry, tension, and anxiety. All conversation died. Children peered out from behind their parents' legs. And their parents stood rigid, eyes downcast, their heads bent forward, their whole bodies cowering inward, trying desperately to seem small, unimportant, easily overlooked. A voice reached their ears and billowed through the crowd, "Make way, make way." Row after row of soldiers thundered down the center of the road, a rhythmic machine of men clad in leather, gold and silver glinting in the sun, sparks of fire on polished helmets and breastplates. Each man carried a sword at his side, a shield on his back, a machine prepared for war. The heavy cadence of marching feet pushed the crowd back, pulsating, moving stones and pebbles at their feet as they passed by in unison. The procession continued with a smaller group of soldiers lifting high the banners of the empire. The image of an eagle, its talons sharp, its wings spread wide, its head held high, prepared to attack. The image of an eagle stitched in vibrant gold against a blood-red fabric. It cast a shadow over the people. Behind that shadow, a group of war horses marched forward, their massive frames weighed down by their own armor. On their backs, they carried the most important men in this company, the generals and commanders of armies, radiating power and privilege. long, vibrant red capes hung down their backs. Atop their helmets stood feathered plumes that made them appear taller and larger. These men were giants. The crowds at their feet were skeletons, thin, frail, compared to these fattened, lean, toned forms of their overlords. Giants made strong by the spoils of conquest. And at the center of this procession rode the fifth prefect, governor of the province of Judea, serving under Emperor Tiberius himself, Pontius Pilate. Pilate ruled over Jerusalem and the surrounding region on behalf of the Roman Empire. He was Lord, he was king, his word was law in this piece of the world. Pilate, a god among giants, standing high and exalted over his subjects. Subjects forced to bow their heads, cast their eyes downward, and clutched their loved ones at the sight of Pilate and his procession. They marched for a reason. They marched to remind the crowd that they were not their own people anymore. The Roman Empire owned them.
Outside the city gates of Jerusalem, a mass of women, men, children, animals, supplies flowed forward towards the entrance to the city. Among them lingered the buzz of anticipation. A name passed between old friends. Men and women strained their necks, reaching up on their tiptoes to see above the heads of those in front. Many turned their necks back to look behind them, searching, seeking, and hoping to catch a glimpse. Without warning, a shout rang out, "He is coming!" The high tones of excitement grew louder and louder, and neighbors and friends turned to each other, repeating back the proclamation, "He is coming! He is coming!" Fresh smiles stretched across the faces of the crowd. Children giggled and screamed, overwhelmed and jittery. In a frenzy of movement, the crowd parted, creating a sliver of space down the center of the road. Those at the back of the crowd lifted up and pushed forward to see. Fathers sat their children on their shoulders for a better view. Up ahead, a man removed his outer coat and laid the wool fabric across the road. With care, he stretched the fabric to cover the section of the road at his feet. Soon others followed his example, and an array of fabrics in brown, green, cream, and a shot of red blended together to create a mismatched carpet. Nearby, trees and bushes were stripped of their branches, the leaves laid across the road by those too poor to spare an extra garment. A song rose above the crowd as a group of men, women, and children led the procession. Their voices rang out a familiar tune sung at festivals and celebrations, a song of rejoicing. Hosanna to the Son of David. Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Hosanna in the highest. Hosanna to the Son of David. Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Hosanna in the highest. The crowd added their voices to the chorus as a donkey came into view, her eyes wide and fearful in the middle of this chaos, but still she walked forward, her colt following close behind. A man rested on the back of the colt. A man robed in a cloak of the same color and fabric as those laid on the road before him. A man who laughed at the children circling the donkey and her colt. A man caked in the dust of travel. A man desperate to meet the eyes of the crowd, to see their faces, to acknowledge them. A man from Galilee. A man they called a prophet, a healer, a teacher. A man some called Lord and King, Jesus. A man they called Jesus.
In Matthew chapter 21, outside the city gates of Jerusalem, we find recorded that entrance of Jesus into the city. But historically, we know that there were two entrances to the city that day. Two entrances that took place on opposite sides of Jerusalem. One was the entrance of Pontius Pilate, the other, the entrance of Jesus. Two entrances that could not be more different. Pilate's grand entrance was a demonstration of his empire, his kingdom, a kingdom of war, a kingdom made and maintained by the sword, a kingdom that subjected others to its will and authority, a kingdom that invaded the land and told the inhabitants that they were less than human, that they were scum, that they were worthless. Jesus' grand entrance was a demonstration of his empire, his kingdom, a kingdom of peace, a kingdom made and maintained by acts of compassion, a kingdom that invited others to be under the authority of a good, good father, whose intention was not to make them subjects, but to make them sons and daughters. A kingdom that invaded the land and told the inhabitants that they were worth more than anything, that they held dignity and value in the eyes of God. Pilate was a king, made king because of acts of bloodshed, made king because of his connections to the right people, made king because he was born at the right place at the right time. Jesus was king, made king because he was the Son of God. But Jesus did not invade the land as a warlord. He came as a man. He came as one of us, whose life was marked by humility, compassion, self-sacrifice, and peace in the middle of a war-torn world that knew only fear and striving and self-serving violence. Jesus is King. Jesus is King. But is Jesus King of your heart? Is he king of mine? Does his kingdom grow and flourish inside of you? Or are you ruled by another? What kind of kingdom lives inside of you? Is your mind a place of rage and jealousy? Is your heart the home to lies and corruption? Does your body house only fear and anxiety? What kind of kingdom lives inside of you? Is it a kingdom ruled by Jesus? Because if not, it is still ruled by something. Still ruled by someone. Is Jesus really the king of your heart? Because when Jesus is the king of our hearts, when Jesus is allowed to rule this mind and this body and this spirit, his entrance is one of peace and rejoicing. Jesus is King, there is only peace. Is Jesus the King of your heart? I invite you today, if he's not, to make that decision and invite him in.